Rorik Honda is busy placing red bows on perfect holiday rides. Don't let the showroom fool you. There is a wonderland of Rorik rides waiting to be had with hundreds of styles.
Simply waiting for your choice of color, make, and needs. So stop by our Bloomfield location or visit us at Rorik.com. And now for the Ajagov podcast from...
Like all over.
Two different markets.
According to the Oxford Dictionary, the word Ajagov is defined as a noun, which means a stupid, irritating, or...
Here's how Pittsburghers define a word Ajagov. When someone cuts you off on a parkway. Ajagov!
Or someone scares the... out of you.
Yeah, Ajagov.
Or it's a term of endearment.
How you been, Ajagov?
This is Captain Wild Bill.
This is Mark Madden.
Hi, this is Rocky Blair.
And this is the Ajagov Podcast.
So this is the Ajagov Podcast. And so Rachel and I are together, and we're in a nice, warm, cozy place. And then she's going to leave me out in the cold, literally, because... We are going to be out in the cold while you get sworn in as a school district person, and Bobby Cherry is going to fill in, and then we're going to go back.
That's a pretty big deal.
We're going to go back into warm things.
Yeah,
when you come back,
that was nice of me.
Like, how do you configure this that you get to not be out in the cold?
I don't. Well, because I'm a school board member now.
The honorable,
the way it works,
distinguished
Rachel
person
Renebeck
from school, the North Hill School District. So, this is the Ajagov Podcast. You're hearing it hopefully on radio.com, and this is the place you should hear it. And we're asking you, if you are listening for the very first time, please subscribe to it. And if you're on iTunes, you can actually leave a comment, too. That would help.
Yeah, for sure. Make sure you're listening. That's all that matters.
And so we come out every week, every Monday on the KDKAAM.com radio's website. And then we come out every Tuesday here on Ajagov.com. And this is where we also talk about what we did on the blog last week. But we really didn't do much Ajagov catching last week.
No, we were videoing, or at least putting them out. So we talked about the Cleveland coach, because that was pretty...
He wore the Mr. Rogers shirt.
Yeah.
No, he wore the shirt we started it to the Mr. Rogers movie. So
yeah, who does that?
What a Ajagov.
Yeah, for sure. And then that, I mean, that nothing tops that. That's like the epitome of being a Ajagov. So the rest of the week was kind of low key.
Yeah.
So Tuesday obviously was the podcast. And then Wednesday we talked about it being ornament time because we have the Ajagov parking chair ornaments out. And then we did our charitable shareitable, which was a fun one.
Yeah. Listen, and that's not over yet. We have a bunch of shares on that video, but listen, here's the deal. It's a car place. They need cars donated. They have a tradition for, I forget how many years, of giving a car to somebody on Christmas Eve and making their day.
And we want that to happen.
Yeah, so get your car. Go out and grab a car somewhere and donate it.
I feel like Tiny Tim.
God
bless us.
Community Auto, you got up there in Cranberry. You got to go up there.
Do it. Yeah. And then Friday was super fun because it was for F to the RZY.
Right. So Frizzy, Pittsburgh's Emmy Award winning rapper, music artist, who has been a friend of the podcast now.
And is about to win a Grammy.
Right. So we took him. Can you believe he's a Pittsburgher and never had a Gus and Yaya's Ice Ball? So we had a video of that. So make sure you go back. And we had a special episode of the Ajagov Podcast with him where it was an extended one-on-one episode of almost an hour of talking to him.
Which couldn't be any better. He's one of our faves at this point.
But this week's podcast.
How about this week's podcast? It's like power packed.
I know.
So we have the one and only Andrew Conti from the Innovation Center, Media Innovation.
Center for Media Innovation.
Thank you. At Point Park. And, you know, longtime Trib guy. I've always adored his work, and I miss him because I'm not there.
All right. And then we have Adam Fallon, who is from Drusky Entertainment. So Adam is the marketing director there. And they're Drusky Entertainment, that's all you hear anymore is Drusky Entertainment.
Everything's
Drusky
Entertainment. Brought to you by.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
Right.
So. And then we kind of traveled. Lucky Bobby Cherry got to talk to those guys as well. But we also traveled to Sewickley, where you were not sure of the location, but it's an old post office, and it's called what? Do you remember, John?
It is Sweetwater Arts
Center for the Arts.
Center for the Arts. Yeah, I almost had it.
You almost had it. But they're celebrating 45 years coming up. That's how long they've been a staple in the community. And what a market. So you can still attend. We just happened to go on opening night, and it's still there for you.
Right. And thanks again to Adam Vallon, who gave us our music this week.
I'm super excited for that.
His group is Nevada Color. Song is Outsiders. You're going to love it. They have a great sound. And it's great because Adam, again, is not only a musician, but books musicians, helps other musicians grow. And so it's a great thing. This is different tonight because Rachel helped us introduce the podcast, and then she took off to go do some civic duties. And so why not have a special guest host, Mr. 365, Christmas 365, Bobby Cherry.
So is she doing civic duties, or is she trying to get on Santa's nice list?
This is actually, well, listen, it's going to be a hard thing for her to get on Santa's nice list, especially if you're asking me, because I've seen her drive, and I've been witness to her.
Ooh,
yes,
we'll have to talk about this later.
That's right. It's scandalous, but Rachel is swearing in as a school board member in the North Hills School District, and she really wanted to be here for all, she likes to be here for all, but Andy Conti is here, founding director of the Center for Media Innovation at Point Park University. So you've been on the podcast, and she's a big fan, so she's disappointed. I'm not blowing smoke up your butt. Yeah. She was very disappointed she couldn't be here to see it.
Yeah, so she couldn't be here, too. I mean, so pleased for you guys to see how everything's grown, how it's taken off. So really terrific. I'm so happy for you guys.
Well, thank you. And the same for you, right? So the Center for Media Innovation at Point Park University, you're a guy that, you know, it's not too non-traditional for a person to leave the public sector and go get a school and a job at a university. But to go get a job at a university and start a completely new category of learning, really, new subject line, a new degree, really, right, in some way. You did that.
Yeah, I mean, it's been incredible. It's been 3.5 years, and I feel like I've grown so much over that time. You know, I'm mid-career, mid-life, and it felt like, you know, it's been such a blessing to be able to go and just do something completely different and use new skills. And so it's been really cool. But I feel like, we've covered so much ground in 3 years where, you know, I was in the same job before that for like 15 years, which was great. But you kind of get, you know, you get settled in. You're like, I'm doing my thing. But
so can you explain, because I obviously know all of what CMI does, but can you explain kind of what the purpose is for the university and then also for the greater community of what the Center for Media Innovation is?
Yeah. So Bobby, like you, I used to work at Trib Total Media, and it was great. But there became
a
point where
former workers of Trib Total Media are like people that live in Charlotte. They used to live in Pittsburgh. Right?
It's true.
It's just, they're everywhere.
And it was great, but we got to the point where we were talking across the industry about just decline and shutting things down. And I wanted to turn the corner on that and say, like, well, what can we start to grow? Like, we're not going to say, like, we don't do journalism as a society any longer. We don't do journalistic storytelling. And so we went out and got some grant funding. We opened up this space at Point Park University, and it's a laboratory for what we like to say the present and future of journalistic storytelling. So we've got space for video production and audio production. We do podcasts out of there, too, and photography. And then we work with professionals on helping them stay on top of the technology, and we work with young people on helping them understand what it means to be a storyteller. You know, how do you tell stories accurately and truthfully?
And so what's that been like transitioning from an investigative reporter to really shaping the way students see the future of journalism?
Yeah, it's been super exciting to go. You know, before when I was an investigator, we would do a story and, like, you'd put it out there, and sometimes it would connect with people, and other times it wouldn't. You'd be like, people aren't smart enough to figure it out. You know, that's like a terrible way to go about it. And what we really focus on now is getting the community involved. And so, like, we should have been doing that from the beginning, have the community there as part of the process. And to go now to where I'm working with young people and the public and all this, it's great. And it's really made me feel like, especially over the last 2 years, I feel like we've turned the corner and people are excited about the future of journalism again, and not just talking about, certainly there's a lot of terrible stuff going on. We're seeing what's happened with, you know, the Post-Gazette cutting back day after, all the days are cutting back. But a lot of new stuff is happening. A lot of exciting things are happening. Yeah.
But it's interesting in that I always think, like, social media, you know, people talk about, like, if you were a jerk 20, 40 years ago, you were a jerk in whatever manner that was delivered in those days, networking event or whatever. If you're a jerk now, you're just another, there's just more ways to be, more delivery systems from which to be a jerk.
More people can see you being jerky, right? Yeah, really, right. Right, yeah.
So, but the same thing there in that the bottom, the the basics of being a reporter, a journalist, are still the same as far as having integrity and investigative mind, yeah. But the delivery models have just changed. Am I right?
Well, that's the fun thing about working with young people especially. So we work with a lot of high school students and college students. And they know how, like, they can make a video on their smartphone, right?
Yes.
Like, that's no big deal, right? They can do, you know, a podcast with no without thinking about it. But they don't know how to, like, how do you get somebody to open up during an interview? How do you get somebody to, you know, make sure that they're telling you the truthful story? And, you know, how do you know what to believe when you look online? All those things. And so it's really great to, like, work with them and have them acknowledge, like, I want to have my voice out there. I know how to do it, but I want to do it in a meaningful way.
So those old school techniques are still, they're age old, right?
How are
students consuming news? When I've been into Point Park classes, I always ask, how do you read the news?
Right.
And most of them are like, I look at TikTok, I look at Twitter.
Right.
What are you seeing from?
So on the days when the Post-Gazette prints, there's like a big stack of newspapers by the front door. Nobody picks them up. And then, like you said, like, it's terrifying. You go into class and you're like, well, how do you get your news? And they'll start rattling off these websites that I've never heard of. And like, I'm like, I don't know what that is. Like, educate me, which has been great because they keep me up to speed on it. But, there a lot of social media. A lot of people say they get their news from, Twitter, which I still question, like, how much news are you really getting from Twitter?
Right.
What I do talk with a lot of them about is, like, what's the original source of that content? Like,
right.
If you saw it on Twitter, like, it's most likely somebody's retweeting somebody else's news. Like, somebody had to go out there and create the original thing. What if those people disappear? And they're sort of like, it's funny, kids, they don't think about that. And you say, like, oh, yeah, what if there's nobody out there creating the original tweet?
Right.
I can't retweet it. So.
A big thing now in news is kind of along the lines of what I do at Inside.com is curating the news. To your point of no original or few original reporting, you know, we're seeing a lot of curation type news content. So how do you teach the students to sort of look for vetted sources instead of, you know, John's Yajagov blog as a
right.
You know, as a news source?
That's not a reliable source. There's some segment out there that only gets their news from you. So just you
God
have to
help that, them. God
yeah, yeah, right.
God help the rest of us.
Take that responsibly. Yeah. We do talk about those sorts of things, like looking for original sources, looking for reliable sources of information. How do you, you know, we do a whole course on media literacy with young people. And one of my favorite things is we show them, there's like this photo that went viral of somebody driving in a pickup truck during a flood, and there's like a shark next to them in the water. And I'm like, the kids love it. And we're like, you know, we went back and found the original photo from like National Geographic of a shark out in the water. Right. And, you know,
I think I've seen that photoshopped with Route 28 or something.
So, and Andrews, this is Rachel's question she wanted me to ask, is that what is the difference today? Everybody's talking about storytelling.
Yeah.
What's the difference between good journalism and storytelling?
Yeah. So in many ways, journalism, the word journalism has become toxic. I see it with parents all the time. They come in and their kids are almost afraid to say, like, I want to go into journalism. And I had a young woman who came in this fall, and she's in high school, and she said, she's like, I really would want to go into journalism, but I feel like there's no future in it. I was like, well, what about multimedia storytelling? Oh, yeah, I definitely want to do that. Like, and I was like, it's the same thing. Like, it's, you know, but it, you know, it's how we talk about it. And journalism has taken such a beating. There's been so much downsizing. But I was at this event 2 weeks ago, Newsgeist. It's a Google-sponsored, invitation-only event where it was technology people and media people. And there was a sentiment there that I hadn't heard before where people were saying, like, maybe it's time to just be done with the old model. And start thinking about what are we going to do going forward? You know, why are we trying to spend all these resources saving things that, you know, especially newspapers? And if newspapers have moved on, you know, we've moved on from newspapers, maybe it's time to think about what does the future look like?
I know we talk about the news. My parents are in their 80s, complain that there's no printed newspaper. But it's not like there's no news. It's, again, the delivery mechanism. So
yeah.
I understand the fact that it really the reporters at the Post-Gazette, you know, they still need to deliver the news in some way, but it's
right.
the fact that the printed piece is going away, I think it's just that's the sign of the times, right? That's that's being an 8-track or a VHS tape. Eventually something takes over for you, right?
Yeah.
But no, am I saying that too simple?
I think it's interesting to see what's happening organically. Nobody really expected the organic growth to happen. We were all talking about downsizing of newspapers. But, like, I'm a PhD candidate as well, and my research is in the city of McKeesport, where the newspaper closed at the end of 2015. again, a Trib Total Media publication. It closed, and so there's no traditional newspaper there, or there wasn't. The Mon Valley Independent, these four guys from Manassas started a newspaper. They've now got an office in McKeesport, and there's all these Facebook groups. Like, people go out and they, like, if there's a shooting, somebody will be listening to it on the scanner and be like, hey, there was a shooting at, you know, this, or there was shots fired at this address, and they'll put it up on Facebook. And so people are figuring it out on their own. It's just, it's not the way it was before.
It's true. I as a journalist, I'm in a lot of community Facebook groups seeing that all over Allegheny County. Oh, yeah. And the region is, you know, Dormont and Moon all have these similar groups of people who do that. Yeah. In place of what used to be newspapers.
Right.
Offering that information.
But that's where you have to be a good person. A stand-up person yourself when you're reading it and judge the source, right?
Well, yeah, exactly.
You know, if I sit there and say, hey, there was a shooting in that, you know, whatever neighborhood, you have to consider my source, for, you know, where my position is.
And oh, yeah,
I
yeah.
think that's really the biggest thing is that we see there's this grading of reporters becoming not reporters. They're opinionated reporters. So it's hard to tell which one's an actual, who's an actual reporter reporting the news factually.
Right.
Versus a slant.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's definitely a problem. And there is one local community, I'm not going to mention because there's a lot of back and forth, but there's a Facebook group, and it's administered by people in the community. And the mayor's been trying to get on the Facebook group, and the administrators are like, no, we're not letting you in. We're in, you know, and so they use the Facebook group to talk about the mayor then. And it's like, well, okay, well, you know, that's, it's almost like weaponizing the social media that way.
Yeah. All right, so here, my big question is, again, the delivery mechanisms have changed, and every day we see a new iPhone, a new technology for music, whatever it's going to be. When you started the Center for Media Innovation,
Yeah.
What has just blown you out of the water is how it's progressed so fast. Like, I'm sure you expected to have this certain timeline, but now technology is blown you out of the water because
we're doing a lot of interesting community work. But the one thing that's really blown me away, continues to blow me away, is we're using the technology to work with people who have disabilities, who have mental disabilities. So there's a woman we work with, and her name's Erin Gannon. She's in her late 40s, and she has Down syndrome. And she has come to the center, and she's learned how to become a reporter, where she hosts her own podcast and she owns her own video show. And the last 2 years, she's won a Golden Quill from the Press Club, where she's gone up against podcast, you know.
Yeah.
I don't think she was in your category, but.
Okay.
I don't,
good.
But she's gone out and she's winning awards. And more than that, she's moved for her job previously, where she was washing dishes. And she just got hired as a spokeswoman for Achieva, where she goes out and interviews other people with disabilities. And so the technologies have evolved so rapidly that these people who their voices were not being heard before can now go out and do something as simple as, you know, use a smartphone to tell their story and have real impact with it.
Yeah.
And to me, that just blows me away.
So let me ask, though, you know, you think of the Post-Gazette, 220 plus years of legacy here in Pittsburgh. How do these smaller outlets like that, or like, you know, Public Source or The Incline, how do they get their name out there to the broader community beyond those who are already informed and those who are already the policymakers? How do they get to, you know, Joe and John in McKeesport or, you know, wherever?
That's by far the hardest challenge, right? Like, that's probably the biggest asset that the Post-Gazette, the Tribune Review, that the old newspapers have is their name. Like, people recognize the name. They trust the name. They believe in it. And it's hard. You've seen how difficult it is for Public Source. They've been around for, what, 10-plus years now, and it's still there. Still people who are saying, like, oh, I'm just learning about this, and I'm just finding out about it. And so you just have to continually use social media, put yourself out there, and just continue to push at it. And I mean, the other challenge that is different now than it used to be was, like, you could go out and do, like, break some really big story, and everybody would be like, you've got to pick up whatever that publication is. Now if you break a big story, everybody else just takes it and aggregates it, and it's like, you know, you sort of lose that impact a little bit.
It goes back to the curation thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, yeah.
Right.
And let's be honest, who clicks the curated links? Like, when I see a curated story, I don't necessarily go back to that original source unless I'm interested and want to see more on it. And I'm a journalist.
Yeah, yeah.
So what does the average person do?
Right. And I know it is, as when you're doing that kind of work, too, you have to be careful, like, how much you share and, like, how much, you know, what do you put out there. But
right.
You know who's really good at all this stuff is Eric Heil at Patch.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's incredible. Like,
He's kind of just taking it on to his heart. You know, this is my job, and I'm going to do it the best ever.
He's just really – and I like – there's so many things that I find out about first from his emails.
Yes.
And then the way he writes them, like, I always tease him about it because I feel terrible. Like, I have to click on it because, like, he writes it in a way you have to open the email. Like, all right.
And he's always on the pulse of Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
You know, Clark Bar Candy Bar or, you know, Kennywood or anything. He's got it. And then he's posting it in all of the Facebook groups that are about Pittsburgh, which is a great way to brand and get that message out there.
Yeah. And he's always been good at that. You know, he had his column at the Trib, another former Tribber. Yeah. But they're everywhere. Yeah.
Rachel's a former Tribber, too, right? Yeah. Like, I don't even know why I'm on this.
But, you know, he's always good, but I think he's really taken that patch. And, you know, patch had kind of died out for a while, and he's
exactly
really
right.
brought
yeah.
it back and revived it
yeah.
in a,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's
for this
what I mean.
Market.
Like, he just, you never heard of it for a long time, and then all of a sudden, there's Eric Howe from the patch. Like, wait, I thought the patch died along. And he owns it.
In his heart, right? Yeah, right.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, I hope he's getting paid for it. That's like,
right. So let's go back to the Center for Media Innovation at Point Park. You're attracting students from all over at this point. What's the next closest competing sort of school like that? Or you guys were sort of the first at doing this, right? Have others copied at this point?
Well, yeah. I mean, so we opened the Center for Media Innovation, and then I realized that WVU at the same time was opening the Media Innovation Center. So,
okay.
You know, so there are a lot of other people out there doing really interesting work. We like to think that we have something unique with our street-level downtown presence where – you know, our TV studio is right on the street. People walking by can look in and see what's going on. And it's also really helped us being at the center of Pittsburgh where, you know, it's easy for media to come in. And so, but yeah, I mean, there's other competition out there. But, you know,
Do you find it hard these days? Everybody complains about the millennials and the other generations. Do you find it hard to motivate them at this point? I don't see that in your face.
No, I think the young people today...
We're too afraid of them. We all say we're afraid
of them. Yeah, right.
We don't take time to learn them, right?
No, yeah, and especially, I mean, like, even the Gen Z students who are coming up in high school, like, they all, and the millennials too, they want to have their voices be heard, and they have the technology to do it. And so it's like just giving them, like, shaping their thinking so that they're doing it in a meaningful way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is awesome. So we are at karaoke. We have to say that we're down here at Market Square. And I don't know. Should we actually sing a karaoke song?
I mean, you can.
No, I'm not.
I prefer not to.
Are you kidding? You guys are going to sit in judgment of all these people and no singing? Come on.
It's the Simon Cowell's of the holiday
That's
market.
Right.
That's true.
I can be judgy all I want. Exactly. I don't have to give up the fact that I can't sing a word. Not one note.
I've never seen Simon or Howie sing on their shows. So.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's true.
But so now going forward as an expert, I mean, you're a subject matter expert in the media at this point. This is a mess right now. This, you know, it seems like to an onlooker, it seems like it's a mess.
Yeah.
But I'm sure somebody has a greater plan to just get out there and take control. It's so fragmented right now.
Anybody who's saying they have a plan really is lying, right? There's no. It looks like a mess to everybody. This event that I was at 2 weeks ago, it was like these were all top media people, and they were all like, you know, what do we do? And we got to, you know, I think the despair has lifted. Like, for a long time, it was just like, everything's terrible. Everything's dying. Everything's terrible. And now it's like, the old model is definitely dying, but there are, like, a bunch of new models out there. And how's it going to shake out? What's it going to look like in 10 years or 20 years? Like, nobody can even imagine what that's going to be. But, you know, we think back, like, 10 or 12 years ago, we didn't have 12 years ago, the first smartphones were coming out. And so, like, we've gone through such huge change, and it's going to continue to evolve. It's an exciting time. I think, you know, like, you look back in history, you're like, what would have been like, you know, when cars were first coming out, or like, you know, when computers were first coming out? I'm like, oh, this is it. This is like, we're living through it now. Like, what is this new industry going to look like? I don't know. But it's people like you with the podcast that are, you know, out here pushing the boundaries and doing different things and trying it and experimenting. I mean, I watch you all the time. You're always doing interesting stuff and trying to, like, connect with people in different ways, and I applaud you for that.
Well, we appreciate that. Again, everybody always says, we wish we had your job, and we're like, no, you don't. I mean, we look like, I mean, as you know, I'm not patting ourselves on the back, but we do work hard at it, you know, to try to get to where we are each time and those kind of things.
I think that's the key that a lot of people miss and a lot of our young people miss is, like, it's a hustle. Like, you're going to have to hustle. And, I mean...
And how do you teach that to the kids in school? I guess I don't know.
Well, we teach an entrepreneurial journalism class now that I started teaching it about 3 or 4 years ago. And I divide everybody has to come in with a business idea. And then they get to vote on the business ideas they like the best, and they form teams, and then they have to spend the rest of the semester like coming up with a business plan, learning how to go out and meet with people who could be potential sponsors and investors. And
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, you got to go out and do it. Last time we had a really – every time we do it, they're like projects that look so great, and then students graduate, and they kind of scatter, and they take off. But like one of these years is going to take off. It's going to be a real thing. So yeah.
If we could ever help with that, we would love to do that. I mean, not that we know a lot about it, but we've lived some of that, you know, trying to figure out sponsors.
Yeah.
How to figure out what the value and return is and all that kind of stuff.
To me, it was a brilliant idea. This group of students came out. It was called the Yins Crowd.
Okay.
And it was, they just flipped the whole sports model. They're like, Pittsburgh's a crazy sports town, but there's no real forum for the fans. And so they called it the Yins Crowd, and they went to Pirates opening day with a bunch of stickers, and people were going crazy. And it had all this momentum, and then they all graduated, and it fell apart. But I still got a T-shirt that says the Yins Crowd on it.
I love that. All right. So, I don't know. Bobby, you have a question at all?
You know, I think, Andy, the one thing that I would say is, you know, I when I talk to the students, back to putting the work into it, they all talk about they want to be the next Oprah or Ellen. You know, they don't think of the steps to get to that point and the limited amount of jobs. You know, a couple of years ago, I was, I think, down and out with journalism. Like, I don't know where it's heading. I don't know what I'm doing. Is print dying? And then I see what you guys are doing, you know, and it's amazing. So not a question, but just kind of a thanks for, you know, sort of reinvigorating the journalism spirit for those of us who are in it.
Cool. Thanks so much for saying that.
Yeah, and, you know, so I have a question for you. Worst, most botched, in your opinion, this is all opinion now, most botched news story of the year of 2019, do you think?
Of this year? Oh, my God.
Is that too hard?
I don't know. There's so many, so many different directions to go in. I mean, I think the stuff we're seeing come out of the White House has just been incredible. You know, like, it's just, like, it's just an ongoing thing. Every day there's some new development and some crazy new thing. And you're like, I thought we hit a low point when, you know, when the president, you know, was, we had him on tape, like, he grabbed her by the pussy. And
it's
like,
right.
Can I say that? This is a podcast we can say. All right,
you
okay.
did. It doesn't matter.
You know, okay, so, and so it's like, you know, but it continues. Yeah. It just goes on and on. And you see the media grappling with that. We actually have Jim Acosta, the CNN senior White House correspondent, is coming to Pittsburgh in February for an event at the Pittsburgh Playhouse. And I'm excited to hear what he has to say about it. Here's a guy who's been on the front lines with Trump from day one. And so I think, you know, that's going to be.
And I guess the best displayed or best reported story, do you think someone really did a really good. A tough thing is that we have the synagogue story, you know, from, you know,
right.
I mean, it's easy to go through to see how that, but I don't know, what's your favorite story that was reported on or a reporter that did it in your favorite way?
Favorite story from this year? I don't know. Yeah, it's tough that you're right. I mean, the synagogue stuff really stands out from the year before. And the one thing I would say with that, too, is I don't think people realize how invested the journalists are. Mm. And that was something we ended up doing. We convened a discussion with the community in Squirrel Hill saying they were concerned that at the anniversary people were going to come in and the media was just going to trample all over them. And we just, and one of the community people said, well, the media is going to do what the media is going to do. And I was like, well, it doesn't have to be like that. So we brought in everybody from the media and everybody from the public and just had a conversation. So I think that continues to be an important story locally. I'll think on it.
You know, you made me think of this. We had Aaron Martin and the gentleman from Channel 4 on
the podcast. Kaplan.
David Kaplan on, you know. And we talked about, you know, my EMS background. Their EMS people are just finally starting to get to PTSD, you know, the debriefing and from all the things they see. Nobody ever thinks about the reporters and what they go through, and they need that as well. I mean, they show up.
We're human too,
right? Yeah. Exactly, and I think it's interesting that finally someone's at least recognizing that population and is needing that assistance. So.
Yeah, it definitely. That was something that hit me when I was at the Trib, and especially because we had to, you know, everybody had to work a Saturday shift, and you know, breaking news sometimes. And I had this one story where this guy was driving down. I think it was 70, and he was with his kid in the car, and something flew off a truck and came through and killed a dad, you know, and it was like, wow, it really resonated with me. And so, like, you just, like, you're right. Those things build up, and after a while, then when you're in the newsroom, there's a lot of dark humor, and,
you know, I'm sure, like, you guys have when
you're paramedics,
right,
too.
For sure.
Find ways to cope.
Yeah.
That's really what it is.
But at some point, you do have to deal with, you know, that's interesting.
So. I will say, too, that, like, going from that to higher ed, there was like a big detox period. Like basically, like I was on my own for a summer where I like couldn't talk to anybody because like I had to what's my language? What do I talk about?
When you're in a restaurant with your buds, it's all done. Hey, how about that? Head was in the ditch or whatever. Like, wait, what is wrong with those people over there?
Yeah, right.
No, well, Andrew Conti from the Center for Media Innovation at Point Park University. This is always awesome. And when you have students doing something cool, when you have whatever, we want to have them on the podcast. We want them to have them be a part of it because basically Rachel and I are going to get old at some point and we need someone to fill in for us. So, but as you know, you probably know, we always have a question of the day on the podcast. And the question of the day is currently the Jagoff third year in a row, the Jagoff parking chair Christmas ornament is up for sale. And we were wondering, well, we picked the parking chair as a Christmas ornament. If you had to pick a Pittsburgh Christmas ornament to represent you, what would it be? Oh,
to represent me? Wow. That's tough. I was immediately going pierogi, but I don't even know why. Like, I love the pierogis, and so I go with that. Like, you know, like there's my outside, and then I've got all this delicious filling on the inside. You know, you got to get to know me. It's like like an onion, like a parfait. I've got layers. I don't know.
Are you fried or boiled?
Oh, definitely fried. Yeah, okay. Butter and onions.
Church
yeah.
lady or Mrs. T's?
No, church lady. Come on. I mean, you go Mrs. T's when you're at Giant Eagle. You're like, yeah, have it, right? But yeah, right.
Oh my God. Well, remind everybody where they find you and your in your department.
Yeah, so we're at centerformediainnovation.com. We're down at Point Park University, and you know, we're at the corner of 3rd and Wood Street. So if you're downtown, you see the studio lit up. Come by and wave in the window. Where you'll
for sure, for sure. And you're on Twitter and such as well?
Yeah, my handle's at Andrew Conti, C-O-N-T-E.
Very good. Thank you so much for coming back on the podcast. You know, we normally have podcasts in the nice, warm little places like the Lumets and all that, but no, we invited you out to this 30-degree weather in Market Square.
It's great. I mean,
And
I think I left my gloves on the bus this morning. Like, that's what I've been worrying about that for the last hour.
I think John is going to go to Burlington to buy some. They invite me on a cold night. Some friends I have.
Yeah. Thanks for coming. Thanks for having me on. And, you know, I'm just really pleased with everything, how it's grown for you.
Well,
and,
thank you.
For both of us, we both kind of started out at the same time.
It's the same as with you. The podcast is not what it is today. It's not what it was yesterday or 5 years ago.
And it's not going to be that way 5 years from now. You got to keep innovating and figuring out what's different and new. So go for it.
As part of the podcast this week, we are judging karaoke. We're also judging with Adam from Drusky Entertainment. And Adam, you judged with us last year. We bonded. This is like our anniversary.
This is almost a date, our anniversary.
Yeah, right. No karaoke going on right now, so time to chat. So first, let's go. First of all, we want to talk about your band or bands. Are you multiple bands?
Just one.
Just one band
my whole life, yeah.
All right. And we want to talk about that. But in the meantime, talk about Drusky Entertainment. Drusky just... You hear the name everywhere anymore. Like, you guys just, do you control the world or just Pittsburgh?
No. I mean, like, I like to think we control the world. No.
Yeah.
No, we're multi-event concert promoter based in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. We do over 500 shows a year in Pittsburgh, Youngstown, Erie, West Virginia, starting to book shows in Middle PA. And we do, you know, shows anywhere from 100-cap clubs to 10,000-cap stadiums. We just recently wrapped up our summer season doing a couple shows over at the Riverhounds new stadium at the Highmark Stadium. Did a couple shows there. And, doing a ton of shows, everything from hip-hop to metal to rock to country. We just started doing a bunch of shows up at Jurgles over the last couple of years, building a relationship with them. Just doing everything here and there, you know, everything in between.
Is it fun?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be doing it if I didn't think it was fun.
Right.
What do you do? Explain to me what you do.
So I'm the marketing manager over at Drusky Entertainment.
Okay.
I oversee most of our digital marketing efforts. I have a wonderful staff of two, a marketing assistant and a booking assistant on top of my boss, who, Brian Drusky, he's the senior talent buyer. We all pretty much work collectively. And in tandem to oversee, you know, all of our budgeting for all of our shows, any kind of advertising execution for radio, all digital media buys, and also any kind of any kind of efforts with our grassroots and street team, pretty much everything in here and there in between.
But let's take that a little deeper, because we like to have people with interesting jobs on the podcast. We had the guy who curates the ice at PPG Paints for the Penguins. But what do you do? What's it like? I'm sure this is my thing. I'm sure when you go to parties, people go, "That's so exciting. And can you get me tickets?" But, and I'm sure people make jokes about the 13 green M&Ms in their green room.
Yeah.
But what is life like for you on a daily basis? You get up in the morning and, what's the process?
Yeah, you're telling me you work from home.
Yeah, a lot of it, for the most part, throughout the day, it's answering emails. It's kind of the during the day is, the boring answering emails. But at night, we're out there going to the show. Kind of taking in all these new acts that we're bringing into town, trying to discover, who the next big thing is that's coming to Pittsburgh. The biggest, piece of it that I really enjoy is, we'll book, all these big bands, watching the support bands that are, the next big thing, and trying to understand, who is going to be the next big band to break into Pittsburgh or break into, the world. It's really exciting because, a lot of my day-to-day, too, is, just listening to music and just trying to be on the ground level of, who's going to be the next big thing, whether that's on a national scale or another part of my job is, and that I love, is booking local acts on a lot of our shows. I'm constantly, listening to music on a daily basis and on daily rotation, whether it's, bands that I love, bands that are being pitched to me from, local bands, and just really seeing, who's going to be the next big thing out of Pittsburgh. It's a really big joy to kind of watch bands evolve as we're bringing them in and developing into Pittsburgh.
That's really cool to think about, because so many people think of music in a national sense, the giants making the calls to what shows come into town.
Yeah.
So that's really cool that there's a local level where that still happens.
Yeah. There's so much talent. We're doing, just in Pittsburgh alone, we're doing, 300 plus shows a year. Majority of them, that we're in charge of putting local support on those shows. So it's very crucial for us to be, really paying attention on the ground level of who is going to be, the next big thing, or who is going to, help better a show, or who's going to be a good fit for the show. So I'm constantly listening to music every day from, acts from all around, Pittsburgh, West Virginia, Ohio, just really kind of taking that all in and helping give these bands, a spot to open for a national act that, could potentially, put them in a good position, whether that's building relationships with other bands, building relationships with promoters, venues. It's a great experience because, even playing in a band myself, I have done, shows with Drusky Entertainment before, and that's put us in some of the best situations. Some of my, my most memorable shows were playing those shows in front of, national acts. So it really helps build the crowd, your fan base, and really help build you as a band professionally too.
So a national act or somewhat, maybe not national, but growing national, do they reach out to you and say, "We would like to come to Pittsburgh"? Do you keep your finger on the pulse and say, "Hey, we'd like you to come to Pittsburgh, and here's the deal we have for you"? Or is it a little bit of both?
It's a little bit of both. Mm-hmm. My boss has great relationships with a lot of, bands, teams, and they'll approach him saying if they're trying to bring a band into Pittsburgh, whether it's, an act that we've worked with, tons of times before, whether it's a brand new act, somebody that's on, that's on the pulse nationally, and we're trying to help build them into Pittsburgh. So a lot of it is kind of, and especially those newer shows, it's bands that have never been to Pittsburgh. It's trying to pair them with the right band, trying to pair them with the right local partners, and trying to really help get their name out. Because some of the best bands that I've heard are bands that nobody's ever heard of, because we're taking in, all this music on a daily basis and constantly, I announced 10 shows this past, and it's only Tuesday. I've already announced 10 shows, and a lot of them are a lot of the club size shows of bands that have never played through town before.
Yeah.
So we're really trying to build that name for that band in the city so they can hopefully come back and do a show for a bigger band. Or a show at a bigger venue. An example of that would be, we booked this band. Have you ever heard of the Struts?
No.
They're a big band on 105.9 The X's Radar. We did their first ever show in Pittsburgh in front of, in front of about 100 people, sold out at the Smiling Moose. And the next, their next playthrough was 2,000 people sold out at, Stage AE. So it's really cool to kind of have a finger and, or have a hand in, bringing that kind of band to Pittsburgh.
Wow.
I was going to ask, how does YouTube play a role in this, or SoundCloud, or some of the super local, obscure bands? Are you hunting through those pages to find, people to bring, or places? I ask this because there was a period maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago where I was so into all these YouTube artists who started off doing covers.
Yeah.
And the old place in the Strip that was the church, I forget the name.
Yeah, Altar Bar. We were the talent buyer there too.
I used to go to several shows there that brought in YouTube stars.
Yeah.
And so like do you mind those places to find like up and coming star, you know, musicians or whatnot?
I mean, it's kind of a plethora of, you know, there's so many different mediums to take in all this music, whether it's SoundCloud, whether it's YouTube, whether it's Spotify. A lot of how I'm taking all this content in is from a local level. It's either, I mean, and even from a national level, it's word of mouth. Mm-hmm. A lot of the time, like, I'm having friends hitting me up saying, like, hey, I think you should listen to this band, or like, hey, this band like is kind of on the pulse, or even just, you know, going out to sing a show. If I see a band that is able to, you know, wow us in the sense of like they're able to build a live performance to where I want to go home and go listen to that and, you know, tell my friends about it. For the most part, like, I'm taking in, at least from a local level, like, I'm taking in things from there, because like one of the best bands, you know, I've seen in the last, at least from here, one of the best bands I've seen in the last couple of years has been the Common Heart. They put on the best show, and it feels like you're going to church, man. It's so cool.
That's crazy. My uncle just mentioned them at Thanksgiving, and I had never heard of them.
They're
and
now so. I'm like,
they were
I
just
love
on
them.
CBS Saturday.
Yeah, they were just on CBS. I went to their show at Stage AE, and not many bands around here can do you know 1,500. People at a show, and it's just crazy to watch their progression as a band start from, you know, playing at the Pittsburgh Winery to, you know, playing in front of 1,500 people. They're just such a talented band, and you know, they deserve every bit of recognition that they get. But
we
on a national
quick break was oh sorry
finish. Yeah, I was gonna say, but on a national level, I mean, like, a lot of it is, I'm honestly, like, I'm tuned into Spotify a lot of the time. I'm listening, I'm putting my finger on like New Music Friday, I'm putting my finger on, you know, all the different playlists that are generated there that, you know, kind of are bringing new names that I've never heard of. So I'm always just trying to, you know, keep a finger on, you know, who is, you know, putting out trending new music, and, you know, whether or not, especially from a promoter standpoint, whether or not it's something that we should look into bringing to Pittsburgh.
That sounds like so much pressure.
I know. But and how do you evaluate what if you don't like that genre of music,
whether
it's good or not?
So I went, I like started working here with a very like closed mind. Like I was the kind of guy that was like, I don't hate country, hate hip hop, hate, you know, this and that. But you know, it's over the years, it's really start like, and especially like being a musician too, it's kind of really helped open me up to, you know, paying attention to more than just like the things that I don't like and what I do like versus what I don't like. I really pay attention to, you know, how it builds a reaction to their fan base or to a person.
Oh, good point. Yeah.
Because that, I mean, that is what is going to bring people out to shows, is going to be, you know, a human connection between the song or a live performance.
Okay, so I have one more question about your real job.
Yes.
Your full-time job,
yes,
and then we want to get to your band. But so if you had to give three tips to an up-and-coming band, I mean, first of all, is have good content, right?
Yeah, good content
good
for sure.
But how are they getting noticed? You said word of mouth. It's the hustle still, right?
It's the hustle. A lot of it, I'm hearing the name from other bands, from other people in the local community. So honestly, like, just get out and play as many shows as you can. Be smart about it. Like, a big turnoff for me is seeing bands that are playing, you know, five times a week, and whether that's at, you know, several different bars, the same spot every week. You don't want to oversaturate yourself just because it makes it hard to get people to want to keep coming out to shows. You got to, like, from a business standpoint, you got to build the demand. And one thing is, like, from being in a band that we've realized is once we, you know, we really limited ourselves to, like, what shows we were playing, when we were playing, to try and be strategic about it. But at the same time, like, when you're first starting out, like, a couple things is, like, A, focus on the songwriting. That's what's going to stick with people most. People are going to remember the song. Number two, practice the live performance. I really hate seeing a band that I love listening to the song, but when I go to see them, you know, the performance is very subpar, or it doesn't, you know, match up to speed with what I'm listening to. And number three, just network, build connections with other bands, other promoters, other venues. That's what's going to help get you in the door with, you know, with other people in the industry. That's what's going to help you, you know, build a name for yourself. Whenever venues are, you know, whenever we're booking shows and a venue's like, hey, I think that this band would be really good because they played through the venue a bunch of times, and I think that they're a good fit with the venue. They're really professional to work with. Really building that relationship but also building it professionally, you know, making sure that there, you practice good etiquette, respecting the venue, promoting your shows. That's what's going to help, you know, get your foot in the door with other people, in my opinion.
All right, so let's switch gears a little bit, because you're not only the marketing dude for Dresky Entertainment, the people that are taking over the entire concert world. you have a band.
Yes.
Yeah, and the band we've been hearing in between our interviews is you.
Yeah.
Yeah? So talk to us about, now we're switching subjects here, because now you're a band trying to be... trying to do what bands
do, exactly.
Right?
Trying to talk about what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Trying to do what I'm talking about. Yeah, it's so we're Nevada Color, or I play guitar in a band called Nevada Color. We're an indie pop rock band, however you want to. We like to play music that will make you dance.
Okay.
Yeah.
Can I hear Taylor Swift?
Nah.
No.
Nah, we won't do that. We don't do Taylor. Right. We don't do
I'll
Taylor.
I'll still come to a show.
Yeah. But we're based out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. We've been a band for the better half of 8 years now, I think. Four out of the five of us, when we started, went to Point Park. Our singer, our bassist, myself, and our guitarist, we were all Point Park alum. The three others, they graduated in 2014. I graduated in 2015. And myself, our bassist, and our guitarist all lived together for the better half of like 2-3 years, and we kind of formed the band over, you know, living together and kind of jamming over the last, you know, like I said, 8 years, and have just been kind of keeping at it, trying to write music, trying to try and make a name for ourselves. So
what's that been like, you know, being on the flip side of that industry? You know, daytime you do that for a living, vet the bands, but what do you do on the as the band trying to get your name out there?
Honestly,
like insider trading, like, you know how to work the, you know.
Well, it's given us a sense. I mean, we've been very lucky to where our guitarist and I, like, we went to Point Park for their sports arts and entertainment management program. It really helped give us a perspective on like how the business side of it actually works. From an etiquette perspective, from a networking perspective, from a legal perspective, from, you know, every aspect of that, really helped us give a sense of how the business actually works. And, you know, it helped, for the most part, you know, it helped us with our networking abilities. You know, that's where we got some of our biggest shows, you know, whether it was through Dusky Entertainment, whether it was through Promo West over at Stage AE.
That's awesome, though. That's a leg up, because you already have that that knowledge.
Yeah.
That other bands who are just kind of like forming.
Yeah.
You know?
That's what I mean. It's like, networking is a big part of it again, like, but on top of that, what we really thrive on was, like, we were very adamant about the music, the actual, like, songwriting aspect of it. We wanted to make sure that we were writing music that was attainable for, you know, the demographic that we were shooting for. We really love bands like The Killers, Vampire Weekend, Young the Giant, all these indie pop bands, and go back to things from, like, you know, I come from roots where I love Simon and Garfunkel. Our guitarist loves, like, Bob Dylan. Our old drummer used to love, like, Kings of Leon and the Rolling Stones. So we kind of all have, like, very different backgrounds musically, but we all kind of bonded over this, like, indie pop sense of music. And that's what we kind of really tried to hone in on whenever we're writing songs. And we were really trying to write songs that kind of, you know, songs that we would normally, you know, listen to were songs that we were kind of writing on the flip side. So it was really cool to emulate that through a songwriting perspective.
Hey, what band name number are you on? You know, bands always evolve with 20 names before they
finally... That's actually really funny. No, it's really funny, because we booked our first show at the Smiling Moose. It was 3 days after my birthday. We had a show booked, and we didn't even have, like, a band name at that point. We had, like, three different band names before that, and we had to go back to the promoter, which was Dressing Entertainment, actually, and we had to be like, hey, like, this isn't our name anymore. And then we went back, like, a week later, we're like, that's not our name anymore. You have to change it on the website. But we stuck with Nevada Color.
Okay.
Nevada, like, we probably went through three name changes before we actually stuck with Nevada Color on our first show. It's been that for the last 8 years.
Oh, so. That's fun.
Yeah. We didn't really go through that many name changes. We were, like, The Apartment at one point. I think Bicycle Thief was one, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. There you go.
Because, like, our guitarist and our bassist were really into the movie The Bicycle Thief. We went through a couple name changes before we actually got to Nevada Color, which was honestly like a fluke of a thing, kind of. Like, it just kind of, it was the one name that we all talked about that nobody was like, that somebody presented it to the band, and we were like, huh? Nobody was like, Yeah. That's not bad.
Yeah.
It was the first one where you're like, it's okay.
Now, we're going to tell everybody where they find you on the internet first. Yes. But, you know, there's a question of the podcast. Every week there's a question of the podcast. The question is, currently the Jagoff Christmas ornament is out there. It's a third year version of the Pittsburgh parking chair. If you had to pick a Christmas ornament to represent you, what would it be?
First, I'm probably going to say a Star of David.
Oh, yeah.
I have a very vivid memory of this time when I was maybe like 10. Or no, I was younger than that. I was maybe eight or nine. My best friend invited me over to Christmas for, to celebrate with his family. I'd never celebrated Christmas with anybody before, and they made me feel very warm and welcome. They even like gave me my own Star of David ornament. And to celebrate the occasion, I was in the room with like my best friend at the time, and he was like, oh, I'm so excited to get gifts from Santa. And nobody told me about it. So my first response was, what do you mean about Santa? And then next thing I know, he was crying in the other room, and then they kicked me out of the house because I ruined this kid's belief in Santa. So that will always stick out to me as like...
And how old were you again?
I was probably 8 or 9.
Okay.
So moral of the story is, don't invite a Jew over for Christmas.
Yeah.
or do. I don't know.
You told a story earlier. You were just talking about that. Because you're sitting next to Mr. Like the right hand of Santa Claus right here, Bobby Cherry,
Yeah.
Talk about what we were talking about earlier as far as, the celebrating the Hanukkah. When you're a kid, it's more exciting as a
kid.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're a kid, it's eight nights of presents. It's a holiday that lasts 8 nights. We take that as kids, we get presents for 8 nights, which is so exciting. And then, you grow up and you're like, oh man, maybe still going to get 8 nights of presents. That's definitely not the case whenever you're 26 and,
Nice.
It was always fun. I mean, I'm not going to lie. It was always fun as a kid whenever I would, go to school the next day and be like, oh, this is what I got for this day. This is what I got the next day. This is what I got the day after. It was always exciting. And then now I'm 26 and it's definitely not the case anymore.
No, but I will say, I mean, and you were saying earlier how, Hanukkah isn't necessarily the biggest holiday on the Jewish calendar. But over the last several years, I've gone to a couple of menorah lightings around the city. Like Dormont has one.
Yeah.
The city county building has one. And it's one of the coolest things to I'm not Jewish, but it's one of the coolest things to be part of because you get to see a different side of how people, who gather for community.
Yeah.
And, obviously with the recent Tree of Life, shooting. I mean, this last Christmas was so emotional at some of the menorah lightings I went to. So it's really cool to see that the public gatherings are so welcoming and educational too.
Yeah.
Because I took some Jewish friends and they informed me on different things that I didn't know about. So it is neat to still see that as someone who didn't grow up obviously celebrating Hanukkah.
Yeah.
So.
And part of the reason why I love the city is, in a time of need, and still to this day, the city has never been more supportive of each other as our own brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. We're all taking care of one another, being supportive of one another. It's really been, over the last year, has just been crazy to kind of see the amount of overwhelming support and just, attentiveness to, one another. Part of the reason why I love the city is, everybody cherishes one another. So
yeah, no doubt about it. Well, tell everybody where they find about you, your Drusky Entertainment on the internet, and your band.
Yeah, so Drusky Entertainment, we're doing 500 plus shows a year. You can catch us, catch all the upcoming shows at www.druskyent.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. And then for the band, we're facebook.com/NevadaColor, at Nevada Color Music on Instagram and at Nevada Color on Twitter. We have a new EP that just came out last year called Rosewater, 3 tracks. We love it. City of Pittsburgh's been very supportive of it and,
That's awesome.
Go give it a listen.
So we moved inside, and this is where we find Rachel Rennebeck, who just was sworn in as a school board member in North Hills.
Yeah.
You didn't sit with us outside where it was freezing next to the PDP heater.
Yes. Well, once you are, you know, a dignitary and you are on a school board,
right, ma'am.
You do
yes,
not
ma'am.
Sit outside in the cold and watch karaoke. You go to Swickley.
Right.
And get warm with the real hobnobbers, you know.
So my esteemed colleague from the North Hills from Ross Township. So we are now in Swickley, as you just said, at the Sweetwater Gallery. Yes. And it is
Sweetwater Center for the Arts.
Thank you very much. Yeah. See.
I gotcha.
Red Pen Mama right there. So, come on, you introduced, you've been here all night waiting for us to get here.
I know, and I know very little. I told them just to wait for
and
you.
And I first want to apologize to Andrew Conti and to Adam because they sat out, and Bobby,
yeah,
they all sat out in the cold.
They're used to it, they're used to it. But we're super excited to be here in Swickley. It's what, a day before Light Up Night that everybody talks about, Light Up Night in Swickley, other
That's
than
right.
Pittsburgh's Light Up Night.
Yep.
But we're here at the Sweetwater Center for the Arts. I knew I was going to get tripped up because I made fun of him, but this has really become a staple in Swickley, right?
That's right. Yeah. So, Sweetwater Center for the Arts, we're getting ready to celebrate our 45th anniversary next year. So we've been here for 45 years, and Holiday Mart that's going on right now, we're celebrating our 25th anniversary of Holiday Mart this year.
That's amazing. Yeah. And that's the voice you hear is Tom. He's the executive director.
That's right.
Right. Yeah. Now you go ahead and introduce the shy person to your left, who seems to know everything about this.
Alex,
place.
They just like Alex is the smart one. They kept
she
saying.
Is the
right.
smart one.
Right? I don't know.
She knows it all.
Tony?
My title is executive director, but Alex is actually my boss. We joke about that in the office a lot because she makes all of the art happen in the gallery and any artists that we bring in and work with other than our classes. It's kind of Alex's little project that she works
okay.
on.
Yeah. Well,
Holiday Mart is
Alex.
A huge project. So Alex Watrous is our gallery manager and curator who makes the miracle of Holiday Mart happen year after year.
That's wonderful. Now, how many years have you said 25 years for the Holiday Mart?
That's right.
And then 45 years coming up for the gallery itself.
Right.
So how long have you been here, Alex? We're talking numbers
I have
now.
Been here for 5 years.
Okay.
For this stint here.
Okay.
I had also worked at Sweetwater for about 3 or 4 years previously. Then I left for a little while and came back.
Okay.
So a total of probably 9 years.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What sucked you back in?
Well, they called and they told me they needed me. So.
Oh, there you go.
The Sweetwater way.
For that. The Sweetwater
I'm still waiting for that call for Rachel.
But, you know, you walk in and we always try, since it's a podcast, we always try to have people visualize if they've not been here to kind of excite them to want to come anyway. But I don't think people even realize that it's two floors mm-hmm. of various things. And you said, now for right now, it's the holiday market and things like that. But what can we expect if it's not holiday time? We're changing things every, what would we say, every quarter or 6 times a year?
Yeah, so in our gallery, which we're standing in right now,
right.
which is the highest level of our building, we do 6 exhibitions a year. So every 4 to 6 weeks, those exhibitions, the pieces that we have, the artists that we work with are changing. In our building, we have over 400 classes a year and almost every type of art you could think of, painting and drawing. We have a ceramic studio, a metalsmithing and jewelry studio, a wonderful state-of-the-art kitchen for our culinary programs. We have
really?
Music
that
classes.
I didn't know.
Wow.
We have a jazz series. We have a summer music series. We keep the building kind of
active.
Moving all year
sure,
long.
Sure,
yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Was the building always a gallery, Tommy? Was
It was not. It opened in 1910, I believe, as a post office. It's
okay.
a decommissioned post office that closed in the late 70s. Sweetwater moved into this building in 1984.
So this is very Pittsburgh-y, is that you... Probably like I didn't know it was here. However, I've been by the building a million times.
And
right?
as soon as we pulled up,
it's the
said,
building
oh.
out front, right in front of the Swickley downtown area with the big white pillars.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And
it's
like,
the corner
oh.
of the community is yeah. you know kind of what we say, where the entrance or the gateway, you know,
yeah.
right at the bottom of Broad Street.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
when you're conducting these classes all week long, that mm-hmm. kind of thing, like people are just coming and going.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And how are you selecting people to instruct those classes? Just based on interest? Like, are you pulling the community to sort of see what people are wanting?
We hire teaching artists, independent contracting teaching artists from across the region to come and teach. We have about over 40, between 40 and 45 artists that we work with every year to teach the 400 classes. And they come from all over. Yeah.
So, Alex, this is not it's your crazy. Standard gallery. We walk in, we see, you know, this isn't just your little I made
no.
up market. Not to put them down or anything, but this is, do do people have to have specific credentials to get in here, or they just make application, you see what their wares are?
Well, we have a group of artists that we invite back every year who are friends of ours who have been working with us for years, and their artwork and items that they bring to Holiday Mart are so popular with our customers. So that is about a group of 30 artists. And we decide each year, like, who we want to invite back. Maybe we had somebody new this year that we love, and we invite them back. And then we also have myself, and then also two committee members will recruit new artists and invite new artists if we see their work around town or at other markets or online, or we just know them personally. But we look for other artists. So there are other people that we invite who haven't done Holiday Mart before, but we've chosen them and we've recruited them and told them, you know, please be part of our sale. Yeah. We would love to have you.
When you're looking for
that. But then we also have a open call. So maybe somebody we don't know about who's new to town or who's just started making something or whatever, anybody can apply and send us images of what they make and answer a few questions. And then we have a jurying process, and we just, you know, choose who we think makes sense.
Sure.
You know, if they fill a gap, you know, we do have a lot of jewelry artists. We have a lot of ceramicists. So sometimes we're looking for something different.
Right.
But then if it's, you know, a fantastic jewelry artist, of course, we're going to add that as well. So this year we have 90 artists.
I was just going to ask. That's wow. That's wonderful.
Several thousand pieces.
Yeah, there's 5,000, over 5,000 items
sort of
here.
Pieces that you can easily get to your car. There's nothing here that's like a painted cello, right. You know, yeah, that kind of thing.
There's a couple large benches downstairs that, you know, we'd be happy to help anyone carry out to their car. But
what types of categories, though? So I know jewelry is always a hot spot, right, as you said?
Yes, we have jewelry, ceramics, which I already mentioned, fiber arts. So we have a lot of accessories, handmade handbags. We have scarves, knitted wear, woven wear, gloves, all of that kind of thing, which are great for gifts. We do very well with those types of items because they're so easy to give as a gift. We have children's gifts like toys, that kind of thing. Just a few items that are toys. But we also have handmade doll clothes that Swickley resident makes every year, like handmade. They're beautiful.
And you can't go wrong with that because
we have artwork, of course. We have artwork. There's prints and paintings and sculptures. We have wood art. But then we also have something, you know, we kind of categorize as hostess gifts, something that would be easy to take, you know, if you're going to a holiday party or, if just over to a friend's house. So there's candles and there's throw pillows and there's, you know, books and soaps and
kitchen
items.
I love that you can just look down and say,
and we have a lot of ornaments, which are also very popular. Yeah. We have a wide variety of materials and ornaments, like what they're made from. Glass and metal and ceramic and paper. It's really fascinating.
All handmade.
Amazing ornaments.
And isn't paper, I am not, I appreciate art so much. I mean that. But I'm not an art, I am just not artistic, right? Maybe if writing, like if you have to really stretch it, I can write, but that's about it. So when I hear these things about what people can teach and what people can learn, it's amazing to me. What I'm hearing is, in the art world, isn't paper becoming like that thing that people want more of? You're seeing like not just origami, but various paper type things. What do you think the appeal is? Or is it trend? Is there a trend in art that
it might just
comes
be
and goes?
I'm not sure what it is
exactly,
but I could say that people get really excited when they see a new technique can come, you know, come to understand a material in a new way.
There you go.
And I think that might be happening right now, where people who are creative and have used other materials their whole life are starting to say like, oh, I could do this with paper. And that is so beautiful. And it's lightweight and probably easy to store, which is always an issue for artists.
Right. There you go.
Rachel's paper technique is caught in printer. That's what it is. It comes out. It looks like origami. Yeah,
that's it. That's why I said origami, to be honest. Nice.
So we're talking about the Holiday Mart right now that goes until December 15th. So if you're listening to the podcast, come down here. In the meantime, all year long. So we have 90 artists. Is that what I heard? 90 artists?
Yes.
Well, how many artists are here when you have a typical exhibit? Just one artist gets the whole place?
We do have a solo exhibition every year, once a year. It's usually in the summer. and we put out a call for artists. Anybody who lives within 200 miles of Pittsburgh can apply to have that solo exhibition. And we just want to offer that to the artists in the region because it's a great opportunity for them. So we've been doing that for maybe 4 years now. That'll be happening this coming July. And we already have the call out for that on our website.
So same process?
Yes. Yeah, okay. They can apply online. So we do, that's the only time that we have a solo exhibition. So once a year we offer that.
I see.
Otherwise, most of our shows are juried or curated.
Okay.
And so it's a group of artists. And it could be anywhere from 4 to 25 artists in the show.
Nice. Well, this is awesome. And, I, you know, again, it's a gem that.
Well, so I have to ask, though, before we go to the question of the day, do you tend to get, and I'm sure you're keeping track somewhat, are you getting more Swickley and outskirts of Swickley people because it's such a community feel? Or is it a little mixture of both where other people are saying, hey, this place really knows what they're doing when it comes to art?
So for a long time, I think the perception was that we were mostly seeing people from the Ohio River Valley, people in Swickley. We have a satellite location in Beaver, so we were kind of going that way on 65 and Moon and Coriopolis. But recently we did a little research of our own and found that we're seeing people from 65 zip codes in the area come to our building here for classes or events or concerts, that type of stuff. So we have a much more regional reach than we thought. So
How
we have
that?
To start
getting
bigger fish, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
It was really exciting.
Right. So if you're driving by, don't just drive by and honk the horn.
Look at the pillars and
look
you're
the,
there,
look
right?
Look at the pillars.
Right.
Park your car. It's basically
we look
free.
Like a post office, but we're actually an art center. It's okay to come in.
I never thought of it until you said that. And I've walked past or driven past a million times, but you're right. It's clearly what it was at one point.
Come
right?
in and learn jazz, learn painting, learn whatever.
And culinary.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
For God's sake, stop in and say hi to Alex and Tommy and say, hey, the Jagoffs told me to come
there
by.
There you go. There you go.
All right.
Question of the day. So, in case you did not know, John and I put out an ornament every year, and it's a parking chair. Because in Pittsburgh, like, let's get real, we all put parking chairs out to save our spots. So that's our ornament. If you could put out any ornament, and let's face it, you are in this amazing hub, so you are expected to have good answers, what would your ornament be? Oh, he put you
I'm
right on the
spot. I'm pointing to Alex first.
What's your favorite thing?
So I'm a musician.
Okay.
I'm not a visual artist. So like you,
you
know, I'm
you
a consumer
it.
Of art.
There you go.
I don't create art know, so much.
But you get
but
it.
There's an argument. You know, I play piano, so that type of thing. So my ornament would probably be some type of music note. Probably that's like glass or something. Alex and I have this thing because I'm obsessed with glass art, and she's a ceramicist, so she thinks ceramics are better. So you know, it would probably be made out of
glass. He just stuck his tongue out, you know.
Really, really colorful or something loud in your face. You
okay.
Know. I'm not very subtle. So,
so Alex, you're nervous. Are you going to go with a ceramic type?
Well, probably.
She like really was bullying you on that thing.
No.
Believe me, we have classes for that too, so I'm used to it.
What would you pick?
Well, I have this style of ornament that I've made a lot of.
Okay.
So I'm just going to go with that one.
Okay.
So let me explain it.
Okay.
It, of course, is made out of clay. It's a ceramic ornament. And there's a... I'm Greek. And there's a cookie that's very common in, you know, Greek cuisine called a koulourakia. And if you... It's basically a coil, and I make coil pots. So it's very... quick and easy thing to make this coil and twist it into the the twisted design of this cookie.
Of the cookie.
And when you're making coil pots, it's just something that comes naturally. So I started making these little koulourakia ornaments and giving out to my family and, you know, people, you know, the
so
family loves them,
to it.
Blah, blah, blah. So
she hasn't given
whatever.
Her coworkers
I've made a bunch of those. So I would say ceramic Greek cookies would be
nice.
My
right.
love like and my it. Ornament.
I love it.
Yeah.
I was, you were like, no.
We're getting a picture of that.
I'm so
if you're
impressed.
Listening to the podcast, look at our Facebook page because we will have a picture of that on
we
that
will,
by the time
for
you,
sure.
of that.
Yeah, look up the cookie.
I love it. I've actually had it. I have a very good Greek friend. Yes.
So, Tommy, where does everybody find if they're listening to the podcast? Don't fall off the treadmill. Don't stop driving your car. The link's in the show notes. And where would they find your website?
So our website is sweetwaterartcenter.org. It's a lot of the same letters, sweetwaterartcenter.org. We're also on Instagram and Facebook, Sweetwater Center for the Arts. You can find us pretty much anywhere.
Nice. And check out the programs, right?
And check out
the
pillars.
You're going to see us in one of these classrooms.
Oh, God.
I'm not sure which one.
Or your artist that wait when Rachel comes in to hide the glue guns. You came, you skipped out, you came back.
I did.
You never once got cold.
No.
And it's not fair.
It's the way I roll, yeah. You know what? We did forget to mention, though, that next week's podcast will be from Lou Mays.
Right. And if you haven't been down there, it's at the 31st Street Studios in the Strip District. And it's like almost sold out every day. But
yeah.
Who are we taking?
Secure your parking for sure.
Right.
Yeah, another powerhouse. So we're going to have Rosalind from Incline Pittsburgh.
Greg Brown,
like you're probably your favorite ever.
I think so. Yes. Yeah. And we have Andy Arnheim from
we're going to get some tips.
Yeah, on decorations and safety and all that kind of stuff. So, again, thanks to all of our guests. Thanks to Bobby Cherry for filling in.
Yep.
Thanks to Russell Howard and the PDP for having us down to sit in the cold and judge some karaoke again.
And to Adam as well as Andrew for braving the cold and hanging out without me.
Yeah, right.
And then, of course, to the folks, especially a shout out to Sarah Z's for connecting us with the folks at Sweetwater Center for the Arts, who have a plethora of opportunities from now. Every season, there's something going on there. So definitely check it out. It has to be on your bucket list. We got to talk to Tommy as well as Alex.
Yeah. So, and don't forget, we have some big news coming up about First Night.
Yeah, good way to tease it.
If you're down at First Night, you're going to want to make sure you're listening to us. So
okay.
That's it. And, of course, thanks to Rorik Honda.
Rorik Honda is busy placing red bows on perfect holiday rides. Don't let the showroom fool you. There is a wonderland of Rorik rides just waiting to be had with hundreds of styles. Simply waiting for
your choice of color, make, and needs. Stop by our Bloomfield location or visit us online at Rorik.com.